Thank you, Fred. Pleasure once again to be here. Before I get into what I really wanted to talk about, I thought I would answer a question that has arisen, and apparently some have questions on a translation of the phrase bleached flour, or bleached linen, I should say. And I'll just give you a couple of scriptures. You'll find this phrase throughout the book of Exodus, but just two will do. And in this case, we have Exodus chapter 25, verse 4, Exodus 26, verses 1 and 31. You can just jot them down. You'll find them throughout the book of Exodus. It talks about bleached linen. And the question was, why bleached linen? Many other translations will have fine linen, twined linen, thin linen. So where do we get bleached? Well, the answer is really quite simple. If you look at the Hebrew word, which is shesh, two sheens, and you go to the dictionaries, and you'll find the words fine, twined, thin, white, bleached. So these are all synonyms of the word. And as scholars have put it, they say a name applied to it from its whiteness. So back in those days, when they had fine linen, they produced it with a process that made it appear white, like white, fine, tender, beautiful linen. And frankly, that's all there is. So it's if you wanted to get the full meaning, you would translate it as exquisitely fine, thin, twined, white, bleached linen. Now, if you were to do that for every word in the Old Testament, you would have a magnum opus. And you'll find that Hebrew is a very compact language, and that one Hebrew word can be enveloped into 5, 6, or 7 English words to give the full meaning. So I just wanted to take a minute or two out to answer that question. Now for what I really wanted to talk about. When I first came to Ambassador College, I was told I had to have a filing system. Got to have a filing system. So I thought to myself, okay, I'll have a filing system. Well, one of my folders was labeled Great Personalities because I wanted to know what made great people great. Be they political leaders, economic leaders, sports figures, scientists, economic leaders, you name it. Well, one of my folders was named labeled Great Biblical Leaders. What made certain men or women stand out? And today I want to talk about one of them, a most intriguing individual. You don't think of him as that important, but believe me, he was. He was not a great conquering king or hero, such as David, Joshua conquering the Holy Land, not a great prophet of thus saith the Lord, Isaiah, Jeremiah, or Ezekiel, didn't call fire down from heaven like Elijah, did not have she-bears come out after a ruly mob was taunting him in the days of Elisha, wasn't a great scholar of the law like an Ezra or a Moses, didn't build a boat to save the world like Noah. So who was this? Well, it was said of him that he was a plain man dwelling in tents. It is also said of him that he struggled with God and man and prevailed. And of course, I'm talking about the patriarch Jacob, son of Isaac, grandson of Abraham. We know more about this man and his life than any other figure in the Bible. Almost 22 chapters are devoted to his life, his birth, his marriages, his death, and burial. And so we're going to look at this man and see why God chose him in particular. And I began to realize that God staffs for strength, not for a lack of weakness. And that's fundamental, and I hope we can all understand it. It took me a long time to realize that. And so I'm going to just read a couple of quotes from this particular book I have by one of the great gurus of management and organization. He's deceased now, but you may well remember or recognize his name, Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker was a great organizer. And this is what he wrote when it comes to staffing. He said, "Whoever places or tries to place a man or staff an organization to avoid weakness will end up at best with mediocrity. The idea that there are well-rounded people people who have only strengths and no weaknesses, whether the term is used, the whole man, the mature personality, the well-adjusted personality, or the generalist, is a prescription for mediocrity, if not incompetence. Strong people always have strong weaknesses, too. Where there are peaks, there are valleys, and no one is strong in many areas. And the point is, for every one of us, there are peaks and there are valleys. The greater the strength, the greater the weakness. There is no such thing as a great man with all strengths and no weaknesses. And God is staffing, what I came to realize is God is staffing his kingdom now. And he's been doing it since the days of righteous Abel. There will come a time when everybody will be called. But right now, not everybody is. He's staffing for strength. And we're going to see, in essence, the gold that he saw in Jacob, but did not see in Esau. A fascinating story, fascinating analysis. So let's start, where else? The book of Genesis and chapter 25. And this is what we're going to see about Jacob. Chapter 25, verse 19. And these were the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban and Syrian. Now we find in verse 21 that Isaac prays to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord heard him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. Now, of course, this word "and," it's a connecting link. So it was found out that Rebekah was barren. Now, that is nothing unusual. We know that Sarah was barren, the mother of Isaac. We know that Rachel, Jacob's future wife, was barren. We know that Hannah, the mother of Samuel the prophet, was barren, not to mention Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. So this happens with some degree of frequency. But it's interesting when it says Isaac prayed and God heard. But how long did it take for God to act? You're talking about a period of close to 16 or 17 years. Because look, in verse 20, Isaac was 40 years old when Rebekah took Rebekah his wife. And then, if you drop down here, you'll find out that he was 60 when they came out. It's amazing. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them, in verse 26. Now, something else that is of interest to me. I had this type of mind, so in one sense, I apologize almost. It says, Rebekah inquired of God, "Can any of you tell me how she did that? What did she do? Did she go to Melchizedek, who was operating in that area? I don't know. Did she look up to heaven and ask? I don't know. Did she try Urim and Thummim? I don't think that existed in those days." And it says God answered. How did he answer? We don't know. So all we have to do is take it on faith. She inquired, she talked to God, God answered her. Because when she conceived, there was a battle royal going on inside her body. Now, I've never experienced that, ladies, but some of you have. Okay, I never have. I don't think I ever will. Rebecca's saying, if it's so wonderful to be pregnant, if it's so great, why am I like this? So what did God say? God answered her. Verse 23, two nations are in your womb, and two kinds of people shall be separated from your belly. One people shall be stronger than the other people. The older shall serve the younger. Now, what do we find here? The firstborn shall not prevail. The younger one shall prevail. Why did God choose the younger one and not the older one at that time? We're going to see. Verse 25. The first came out red, like a hairy garment all over, and they called his name Esau. Now, this is interesting because Esau was to inhabit Mount Seir. And you can read the various scriptures where Esau is Edom and Mount Seir. And this is an interesting pun in the Hebrew. The word for hairy is Sa'ar. The word for Mount Seir is Seir. Now, there's a connection there. whenever you see the same root letters in Hebrew, those words have similar meanings. They're synonymous. It's not like English. And I don't know about the other languages. Some of you speak Spanish and others, and you would know in your language. But in English, you can have a word such as I've used in the past, run, R-U-N. You can run a race. And horror of horrors, I remember my grandmother just throwing up her hands in horror because there was a run in her stocking. Wouldn't never go out with a run in your stocking, you know. I never experienced that, but you need. We could have a run on the bank. We could run a race. We could play the game of baseball and bat in some runs. In Hebrew, you can never have that. When the root letters are the same, the meaning is synonymous. And so what you really have is, since Esau is a hairy man, and he's going to inherit a certain land, that land took his name, the land of hairiness, or Mount Hairy for hairy Esau. It's a pun. It's a play on words in the Hebrew. And you'll find this throughout. Now, that's not a great important thing, but it's interesting. At any rate, he comes out like that. Now, notice Jacob. And it says that his name was called Jacob. And Esau was a skilled, we're going to back up a minute. Esau was a skilled hunter, a man of the field. Jacob was a quiet man. Now, Esau would have been in the American West, a Jedediah Smith, a Jim Bridger, maybe even a Daniel Boone or a Davy Crockett, a frontiersman, rough. Not Jacob. Jacob was different. Esau, on the other hand, was a man, though we'll find, who lived for the moment. Now, Jacob was called a quiet man, living in tents in verse 27. Now, this word quiet, very, very interesting. It's called tam in the Hebrew. And we're going to take a look at that word tam and see that it means more than quiet, more than peaceful. There is a spiritual, there is a character assigned to that name. Among others, we're going to go to Genesis 17. Few pages back, if you turn there with me, and God is speaking to Abraham, or Abram at the time. And when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty, walk before me and be thou tamid, be thou tam, be thou righteous, be thou blameless. So you see some of the connection? God is describing Jacob as Tom. There's a certain righteousness in Jacob. It's buried. Oh, we'll see how deep it's buried, but it's there. But he doesn't see it in Esau. Now we're going to go back a little further, and we're going to see the same thing in the days of Isaac. Chapter 25. And I'm sorry. No, we're going to go to, if I can find it here, going back to the days of Isaac, where he's told that he's not going to go down into Egypt. And that, I believe, is Genesis chapter 26. And we're going to find, here we go, verse 9. Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, she surely is your wife. Why did you say she is my sister? And I said, because I was afraid. I didn't know. And we find that he says to God when he's going to be punished. And let me get my right scripture here. I'm sorry. It is here. I will find it in a moment. Genesis 20, verse 6. I'm sorry. Genesis 20, verse 6. Wrong place. Call me Wrong Way Corrigan if you want. Ain't used to that. Right. God said to him in a dream, yes, I know that you did this in the sincerity of your heart. And go up to verse 5. Did he not say to me, she is my sister? In the sincerity of my heart, in the innocence of my hands. The word tam. So tam has the meaning of innocence, of sincerity, of a certain amount of perfection. All this is similar. This is how God describes Jacob, but he does not describe Esau that way. Now, let's look at some incidents that happen in the life of Jacob, and we'll see such brotherly love. Chapter 25. We're back to chapter 25. And one day, the boys grew. Esau was a skilled hunter, verse 27. And we find that, verse 29, Jacob boiled soup. Esau came from the field and was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "I beg you, let me eat of the red soup, for I am faint." Now, in the Hebrew, it does say red. That's true. Many English translations don't have it. Esau was not using Marcus of Queensberry etiquette. He wouldn't say while sitting at the queen's table, "I say this, Arthur, would you kindly pass that red lentil soup?" What he's saying is, "I want to chow down on that red stuff. We're going to chomp vittles." This is Esau. He's rough. He's gruff. Now, what's the first thing that Jacob says? Verse 31, "Sell me your birthright." Now, what brotherly love. Jacob is living up to his name. Jacob, who's grasping, who pulls himself up while pulling others down. This is the name of Jacob. Esau says, "Behold, I'm at the point of dying. I'm dying of thirst, of hunger. What good's the birthright to me?" Jacob says in verse 33, "Swear to me your birthright." And he swore to him. And then in verse 34, it says, after eating, he ate and drank and rose up, went his way. Thus did Esau despise his birthright. But there's more to that in the Hebrew. And I want to read you a literal translation, which I have worked out, and you will get the feel for this. The syntax changes, and this is how it literally reads. "And he ate and drank and rose and went," and then it changes. It doesn't say he went, he did this. It says, "and despised did Esau the birthright." Not in this manner he did it, not in this way he did it, but it's a condemnation of Esau despising the birthright. And we'll see what the Apostle Paul had to say about this. He had a few choice words for Esau in comparing Esau with Jacob, and we will see this. So he goes off, and then the second incident comes. We find out in verse 27 that Isaac's eyes were dim, verse 1. He couldn't see, and I'm going to paraphrase this as we go down. He calls his oldest son Esau and says to him, "My son." And he said to him, "Here am I. I'm old. I don't know the day of my death. Take your weapons, your quiver, your bow. Go bring savory meat for me, and I will bless you." And what happens in verse 5? Rebekah listened when Isaac spoke to Esau. Rebekah spoke to her son Jacob, saying, "Behold, I heard your father speak to you. He's going to bless him. So therefore, you get me kids. I will make food, and you will get the blessing." Didn't Rebekah hear God when God said, "The elder shall serve the younger"? Rebekah, like Sarah before her, jumped the gun. Didn't God promise Abraham a son? Well, yes, but it's taking God a long time to do it. See, I've got to help God out. I'll take my maid Hagar and give her to Abraham, and I'll have a son that way. No, that's not what God had in mind. Well, Rebekah says, "This is terrible. This can't happen. I want the blessing for my son Jacob." Reminds me of a certain mother of the sons of Zebedee who wanted her sons to sit at Jesus' right hand and left hand. Well, you know, God's in control. God doesn't need help. He's very capable of doing what he needs to do. So anyway, Jacob is worried. He says in verse 12, "My father will feel me, maybe. He'll see me as a deceiver. I shall bring a curse upon me." His mother said to him, "Your curse be upon me, my son. Only obey my voice and bring them to me." Now, and we're going to find out that in a way, the curse was on Rebekah. Rebekah did pay a very heavy price, because when Esau found out he was going to kill him, Rebekah and Isaac had to send Jacob away. And Rebecca thought, well, I'll call him back in a few weeks, a few months, a year or so. She never saw him again. The price she paid for this, what shall we say, trying to speed things up, was never being able to see her beloved son again. Because when we read how Isaac came back, I mean, Jacob came back to Isaac, mentions Isaac, nothing about his mother, Rebecca. She died in the meantime. So she paid a price for that. At any rate, we find here that Jacob went near to Isaac in verse 22. He felt him, that's Isaac felt him. He said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Did not recognize him. Following the next several verses is the blessing. We don't need to go over the blessing. But God, Isaac did bless him. Now, what happened in verse 30? It came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was scarcely gone from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau comes in. And who's this? Who are you? Says Isaac. He trembles in verse 32 and verse 33. Who is the one who hunted deer and brought it to me? I have eaten it all before you came and have blessed him. Yea, he shall be blessed. And here is our man Esau. Notice his reaction. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing. Esau said, is he not rightly called Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Have you not reserved one blessing even for me? And Isaac said, I've made him your lord and all his brethren. Dropping down to verse 38, Esau said to his father, have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me also, even me also, my father. Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And finally, down in verse 41, Esau hated his brother because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. Now, what did the Apostle Paul have to say? First, Esau said, he's stolen my birthright. Not true. Not true. Granted, he pressured Esau, took undue advantage of him. Jacob didn't steal it. Turn over with me to Hebrews, if you would. Book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapters 11 and 12. And we will see some interesting observations, some commentary by the Apostle Paul. Page 1214, if you're looking for it. 1214, Hebrews 11 and verse 20. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things that were to come. And now verse 21. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped God, leaning on the top of his staff. An observation. Where was it ever said of Esau he worshipped God? Never. Now, that's not to say Esau never recognized God or acknowledged him. I'm not saying that. But the Bible never describes Esau at any time as worshiping God. But it does describe Jacob as worshiping God. Again, God saw something in Jacob. He saw this. Now turn over to chapter 12, just across the page. And we're going to pick it up in verse 14. Pursue peace with everyone and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord, looking diligently, lest anyone fall from the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and through this many may be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or godless person as Esau, who for one meal sold his birthright. Because you also know that afterwards, when he wished to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, and he found no room for repentance, although he sought it earnestly with tears. Esau never repented. We have no record of any repentance. You see the contrast between Jacob and Esau. And the truth is, the same is true of us. I don't know why. I can't answer that. God is now, we talk about staffing, God is now staffing for his kingdom. And he has chosen us. And sometimes I think of myself, what does God see in me? What does he see in you? He sees something. He knows that somewhere, somehow in you is something he wants, and he will develop it, and he will chip away at the edges. And we'll never finish it today, I'll guarantee you, because it's too big. But we will see in the next coming weeks and months how God worked with Jacob till finally toward the end of his life, this brash, cocky, arrogant young patriarch would say before Pharaoh of Egypt, "Few and evil have been my years, and I have not attained to the age of my fathers." Now, what a come down. And we'll see what God has to do to bring Jacob to that point. And everything that Jacob, all his tricks that Jacob foists upon others will come back on him in order to make him a true servant of God. We'll see that. Well, now we're going to go back to Genesis, and we're going to pick up the story of Jacob. And we'll see another contrast between Jacob and Esau. It's amazing the difference between these two. Well, back to Genesis chapter 27 and verse 42. And these words of her older son Esau were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is going to comfort himself concerning you. He's planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban to Haran. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away." That was going to be more than 20 years, although Rebekah had no concept at the time it would be that long. "Until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him, then I will send for you." But she never could. She never did. "And bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved of both of you in one day?" But she's going to be bereaved of Jacob, for she will never see him again. And Rebekah said to Isaac, "I'm weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth like those of the daughters of the land, what good is my life to me?" So she's using this to try to get Isaac to send Jacob away. But she's also serious. She doesn't want Jacob taking a wife of the daughters of the land, as Esau did. We'll see that. So Isaac called Jacob, verse 1 of chapter 28, blessed him and commanded him. And he said to him, "You shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take a wife there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. And may God Almighty bless you, make you fruitful, multiply you, so that you may be a multitude of people." Now you will notice Isaac recognizes that the blessing he gave Jacob would be fulfilled. He knows it. "And may he give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your seed with you, so that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham." So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram, to Laban, son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now, interesting, verse 6. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, sent him away in order to take a wife from there. And that he blessed him, he gave him a command, saying, "You shall not take a wife for the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother. Again, the contrast. It is never said of Esau, he obeyed his father and his mother. Now, I'm not going to say Esau never obeyed his father and his mother, never did anything his dad asked him to do, but it's interesting. It specifically credits Jacob with obeying his father and mother, but never so credits Esau. There is a difference, a fundamental difference between Esau and Jacob. Verse 9, Esau went to Ishmael and took a daughter of Ishmael to wife. Now, why did he do that? Well, verse 8, when Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please Isaac, his father, he went to Ishmael. Now, he already married two daughters of the land, so he figures, well, dad doesn't like these daughters, so I'll go to Ishmael's line. I mean, Ishmael was the son of Abraham, wasn't he? So it's got to be better. My dad's got to at least approve of that. This is what he's thinking. See, so we leave it. We leave it there, and we're going to see Jacob on his journey. And hopefully we'll have enough time to get through God's promise to Jacob, and we'll leave it there for today. Jacob went out, verse 10, from Beersheba, and went toward Haran. And he came upon a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and placed it on his head. And he lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth. And the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. The Lord stood above it and said, did God ever say anything to Esau? Not that we know of. But notice what he says to Jacob. I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your seed, not to Esau. This is an absolute promise God is making to Jacob. Your seed shall be like the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And then a specific promise to Jacob. And behold, I am with you and will keep you in every place where you go and will bring you again to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken of to you. What, when you think about it, what an incredible promise. God is saying to Jacob, Jacob, you don't know it yet, but you're in for a tough road to hoe. But no matter how dark things may be, no matter how many troubles may come your way, no matter that you may be sinking, I give you my word. I will bring you back. I will not let any irreparable harm befall you. An absolute promise that God makes to Jacob. In fact, later on, not today, but a few months, whenever I get a chance to continue on this, we will find a very small promise that God makes to Jacob regarding Joseph. And God even kept that one. He is a promise-keeping God. So Jacob rose up. He woke from his sleep, verse 16, and said, surely the Lord is in this place. I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how fearful is this place? So he rose up early in the morning, verse 18, took the stone which he had put on his head, set it as a memorial, poured oil on it, and called the name of the place the House of God. Then Jacob makes an interesting vow, and we're going to leave it there today. It's not what it appears to be. It's not a conditional vow. You read, Jacob made a vow saying, since God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I should go and will give me bread to eat and clothing and to put on, and I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give to me, I will give the tenth to you. Some have thought that this is a conditional vow, that Jacob is saying, now God, if you really promise to do what you say you're going to do, and you really bless me and give me all this, then you will be my God. No, that's not the force of the Hebrew. That's not what Jacob is saying. Now, we do have it correct here in the sense, verse 20, since God will be with me. So follow through from there. God, since you're going to do this, you are going to be with me, you are going to bless me, you are going to give me all that you have promised, then since you're going to do this, by the act of your doing this, you will demonstrate once and for all to all the world and to me that indeed you are my God. Not that if you don't do it, you won't be my God. You are my God. But by doing this, you will demonstrate clearly and unequivocally that indeed you are my God. And that's the end of the blessing, his vow. And Jacob goes on to the sons of the east, and he meets Rachel. And we're never going to have time to go through that part of it this morning. What is going to be most interesting, how God begins to take Jacob down through Laban, through trickery, through deceit, for 20 years of labor, changes his wages until God blesses him by showing him genetics through the dream, the vision that he had on how to have cattle and sheep reproduce. Fascinating story of Jacob with Laban And we'll see just what kind of a trickster Levon is. But I'll give you one thought. Where we come in Genesis 29, and I'll have to ring the cowbell here. Boy, this is a... Like it, Fred. Like the cowbell. New cowbell. You will find here, when Jacob meets Rachel, it says here in verse 12, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman. Now, that word for kinsman is achi, which literally means my brother. Not a kinsman, but a brother. Well, that was false. That's not real. Because after all, Jacob is the nephew of Laban. He's not his brother. Now, there is a Jewish tradition, understanding. Again, the rabbis, you know, so gotta ring a cowbell. And what it is saying is that I am going to be to Laban. I'm going to be closer to him. I'm going to be so close, I'm going to be like his own brother. In other words, if I can put it colloquially, and I do mean colloquially, and no offense to anything, but as I remember the saying, I'm going to be as close to him as stink on a skunk. He'll never outfox me. What Jacob had in store for himself, he never knew. He found out, but it's amazing. But that is, and that's a tradition. That's the thinking of some of the rabbis, why he says he's his brother. I'm going to be close to him as a brother. But Laban still outfoxed Jacob, and God had that in mind. So anyway, we're going to pick that up next time, and I hope that you will even see more of this man named Jacob and how God works with him and chips away at his ego, chips away at his vanity, at his grasping nature, until you find a completely changed man by the time he gets to meet Pharaoh in Egypt.
For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.